Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Aeroshell Square, AirVenture 2010. We're by the F-16, which is right behind the behind the Buffalo. I'll call it the Buffalo Wings. Right behind the Buffalo Airways DC-3, if you want to come over and give a listen all. We are with Major Bart Van Roo. He's the pilot for the F-16. Bart, let's talk about, first of all, have you done any combat flying in recent years, and where you been, what you done?
Jerry, I'm out of Madison, like you said, guard, and since 2001, the guard's taken on a little different model than we normally did, and I started flying this airplane in 2000 and started full-time in Madison in 2001, and we've been overseas four times as a unit in Madison, so we've done tours, three full tours in Iraq, and one where we were doing some combination flying between Iraq and Afghanistan, but primarily in Operation Iraqi Freedom. So
this is going to be their toughest question, Bart. How come you didn't get Osama?
Yeah, I was unfortunately there just a little too late. But
yeah. Were your missions when you were flying over there, were they quote-unquote dangerous missions, or are you far enough up in the air where the RPGs and whatever else they've got don't bother you, the flak doesn't bother you?
Well, we're pretty high up in the air, so relatively speaking, it's a pretty safe mission. Obviously, it's a single-engine airplane, so probably the biggest threat for us is over there is the engine quitting, and then you're kind of out there by yourself. So that's probably our biggest threat, but low threat as far as that goes. And what we primarily do over there is provide support for guys on the ground, and we're kind of fast, heavy munitions. So if it allows 2 to 4 airplanes are flying at any one time, and then we can kind of go anywhere in the country. So if there's a big fight that kicks off, we'll go respond to that. So
do you carry the smart bombs on your aircraft?
We do. Yeah, we do. We carry two different types of bombs that people call the smart bombs, a GPS-guided bomb and then an actual laser-guided weapon. And this jet doesn't have them, but we carry an imaging pod on there that we do everything from actually helping guys find people when they're searching houses or blocks to actually guiding the weapons with that pod. So,
did you have to have the, shall I say, pleasure, privilege? Did you have to ever fire any of yours at any specific targets? I don't know if you can talk about those or not.
Yeah, I mean, obviously not getting too specific, but yeah, I did, and there's lots of guys in our unit that have over the course of 4 deployments. You can imagine that's a lot. The last deployment we went, we just got home in just about December 1st of last year. We didn't employ any weapons the whole deployment we were there. So it's interesting to see from when we started in 2004 to 2009, quite a shift in the amount of combat that's going on. So definitely getting to be a much more stable, different place.
Got to ask the question then, was that disappointing that you didn't fire any weapons? I mean, I don't want to say you're trigger happy or anything like that, but I mean, you have a mission, you want to go in, you want to do it, kind of like the marshal, so to speak, you want to get rid of the bad guys. What's the morale like when you come back and you got all your weaponry still on board?
Well, I think most guys think of it probably just like you would, like you said, a good example is maybe the sheriff. You know, if you're the sheriff in a nice town that used to be really bad, you're pretty happy about the fact that, your deputies are out there. I guess the guys on the ground are the guys that are, they're not as much of fights. If we're not employing weapons, that means they're not in encountering as much a fight, and they're, it's safer out there. Obviously, still not the nicest place in the world, but so for me, that's a good thing that I'm not having to employ weapons, and I support them with the other assets that we have. So it's not just employing weapons that we're doing there.
Let's talk about the F-16. Is this your plane? I mean, have you flown any other combat type aircraft, and what do you like about this versus the other ones?
Well, I have flown in an F-15, so I have limited experience with that. I've flown against Harriers, against F-18s, the things I like about this, obviously they're all very similar just on the face of what they do. In the F-16, you get to do a lot of things, so your missions are really varied. So an F-15C, you concentrate on air-to-air, and an A-10, you concentrate on air-to-ground, and I'd love to fly those too. They're great airplanes, but the cool thing about doing this is you get to do all of that. You get to do the fast, really fast, dynamic air-to-air training, and then you get to go do CAS and support guys on the ground and shoot bullets at the ground and, see that whole side of the world. So, an F-18 is similar to this in that you do both missions, but, it's single seat, very fast pace and a you feel satisfied that you did a lot when you're out there by yourself. It's a pretty cool dynamic, and getting to fly all those different missions is just something that I think is probably the neatest thing about the F-16.
As a pilot, is it a busy cockpit for you, Bart, or when you're flying the plane, or do you have time to look around, so to speak, or have you got to constantly look at your instrumentation, your scopes, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, well, it's a busy cockpit, but it's a little different than probably, say, for instance, like flying a P-51. You concentrate maybe a lot more on doing the actual flying, and you didn't have some of the navigation tools that we had, so they had to spend a lot more time on that. But then we also have so many different weapon systems and sensors and everything that you have to, one, be proficient at, and two, know how to operate well enough to really employ your weapon at its max potential. So it gets away from being just an airplane and really is used as a tool for all those different avionics that you have on it. So it's very, very busy, but it's, I compare it on a very baseline level to kind of like, a kid's video game. Is once you do it enough and you get really proficient at it, you're doing a lot of the buttons and the switches and the employment of stuff just out of straight memory. And the flying is sometimes an afterthought because you're doing all those other things.
You equated it, good analogy. Is it like playing a video game, only a far more sophistication type of thing? Is it a fly-by-wire, or do you have, are you at the mercy of the computers, or do you have control?
We certainly do have control of all the computers here. You know, it is a fly-by-wire jet, so it is completely fly-by-wire. Unlike most jets that have some type of backup cable system, we're just electronically controlled, and it is. In some ways, when you're doing like a low G, not so fast mission, it's sort of, can sort of be like playing a video game in some ways. You know, obviously it's real life, so you're never really thinking of it that way. But then at the same time, when we go out and do some high G air-to-air combat mission, it's far, far different than flying a video game as far as what kind of impact it has on your body. And that's when we do have some two-seaters. When we take people, for instance, like we'll take some of our crew chiefs up for incentive rides to show them how this airplane works that they've been working on for 20 years. That's probably the thing that I hear most. They didn't comprehend the demands that it physically puts on your body, even when they're doing kind of basic G maneuvering, that kind of stuff. So,
all right, learning to fly this bird. Today is July 27th. I'm going to learn how to fly. How long before I could become, quote unquote, proficient enough to jump in that seat and handle it on my own?
Well, we just got, where is he here? We have our newest lieutenant, Mike Coob, around here somewhere. We hired him just about 3 years ago. And he became mission ready yesterday. So that means he's very basic mission ready just about 3 years after the date we hired him. So real close to that is about how long it takes. And there's some wait time in there, but essentially a year of pilot training. Then you do about 3 months of some advanced fighter type training in T-38s. And then you go on to the F-16, and that's about another year. And then you'd spend, he was about the fastest guy we've done it, but anywhere from 3 to 6 more months getting what we call basic mission ready, where we could actually take him to combat if we were going into combat tomorrow. And then really getting proficient to the point where you're a flight lead and you're an instructor is another 5-6 years. So I'm about 10 years in, and I've got most of my squares checked as far as being proficient in the airplane. So that's how long it can really take.
Is that intensive training, or is that stretched out type training?
You know, it's pretty intensive. The year, especially that you're doing in pilot training, is a very compact time that you're learning to fly it. You know, you're flying just about every day, sometimes twice a day in that time period. And then there's a couple months here and there break when you're transitioning, moving schools because you're going from one base to next and that kind of stuff. So there's some breaks in there. And then a lot of times those gaps are filled by things like we have to do water survival training to know what we do if we eject out of a seat and we land in water, or land survival and resistance training for if we're in theater and we got captured, all kinds of things like that kind of fill those gaps. So
what's the washout rate for every 10 guys that go in?
Well, you know, I don't know what a solid figure is, but for instance, the classes around my time, we had about 35 people start pilot training. We had 24 graduate pilot training, and 5 of those people were flying fighters, and the rest are kind of distributed against other kinds of airplanes. So the washout rate then was probably in the ballpark of 15 to 20%.
Which isn't too bad. All right, do you have another plane you would like to fly after this one? I know a lot of the guys are looking at the 22, although there's a question whether that's going to fly anymore. And then there's the F-35. Do you have a goal, or is this your bird?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would love to fly an F-35. It's a really similar platform in a lot of ways with next-generation technology on it. And I've been down and seen the factory, and obviously those are kind of getting delayed and delayed and delayed, and now they're looking, you know, the bulk of them are maybe in the 2020 time frame. So, you know, I'll still hopefully be flying at that point. So that's kind of my next goal. The F-22, if you've ever seen the demo here, it's it's a pretty amazing airplane, what it can do with AOA and what it could do air-to-air, not even to mention its system.
We'll take some questions from the audience. Anybody got a question they want to ask the Major? Just raise your hand. I'll come out to you guys. Anybody?
Good afternoon, Major. How are you?
Good.
I like to have a question. Is this the older version of the F-16 or the newer one?
Well, there's a bunch of versions, which gets a little confusing in how they're labeled when you're just looking at it. But this is what's called a Block 30 F-16. And so they went lots from a lot of the foreign countries are flying Block 25s and before, and then the new delivery foreign ones are called Block 50s or Block 52s and after. And so if you ever look on the tail, you can actually see right up on the tail number, at least of all the U.S. Air Force birds, there'll be a year, 87. So we're 87. I like that.
Are you a former F-16 pilot?
No. I wish I was.
Are they still making this bird, Bart?
They are. They're making what they call Block 50s, okay, which are very similar but different inside a little bit.
What is the F-16 that the U.S. government sold to Iran? And then because of what happened to the Shah of Iran, the F-16 went to Israel. I'm sure you're aware of that. Is that the old type? That was one of the first F-16s.
Yeah, you know, I think it is. I'd have to look exactly, but I think that's what are called Block 15. And the differences, just for like basic ones, are often in basically what the body construction is, the engine inlet, and this one is actually called a big inlet, Block 30, so it's getting real specific, but it has a little bit more thrust available because of the way the airframe is designed. And then the Block 30 and before had an analog flight control system, where after that they went to digital. So those are a couple of the differences, and the more I talk about it, the more it gets a little bit confusing.
Are they that similar inside, Bart, when you go from the Block 15 to the Block 25, Block 30? Or would you be completely lost if you went from a 15 to a 30?
No, a lot of the differences are really in what's turned on as far as what's specifically in the avionics and available to fly. So if you were just going to go out and fly from here to there, not really that much different, other than some of the basic flight control starting and those kind of things. Some of the real specific systems, but like I had never flown Block 50s before, and I delivered some to Greece last year with a half a day discussion on what's different in them. You know, they're really not that different in getting it, flying it, that kind of stuff.
Just don't ask to fire the Tomahawk, is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Question, the F-16 in 1986, where the Israeli went into Iraq and bombed the power generating stations, the nuclear generating station. This went six of them, and they all came back all safe. But they had, I don't know how they had to refuel en route, because they have to fly below radar to go through Saudi Arabia and everything. So they must have done a hell of a good job to go all the way there and back safe.
Yeah, and it's sort of a famous mission, but I don't know any details on it, though. So, thanks.
Okay, thank you for your question, sir. Sounds like he knows the history. Okay, anybody else got a question? We're more than willing to take them. No? Okay. Lifespan of these birds. And let's talk about ratio of fly time versus maintenance time. Let's do that one first. If I fly this for an hour, how many hours of maintenance are we going to require?
As you can imagine, it's changed over the life of the airplane, you know, and I don't off my hand know what the current figures are.
Ballpark is fine.
But this airplane's been flying since 1987, and I think, you know, we're looking at in the ballpark of 20,000 hours that are on this airplane. And then Block 40s and some of those things that are similar, maybe slightly newer, and have up to 30,000 hours on them. So you can kind of do the rough math over, you know, over a 10-year span, they might fly about 8 to 10,000 hours current airframe stuff now. So what they're doing, and it's changed a lot, because in the 80s, and a typical mission we're doing on training is anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half, a very typical one. And then now we've done alert caps in the United States that are 6 to 8 hours, and we fly CAS patrols in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they're anywhere from 6 to 9 hours. So the actual airframe time on these airplanes is accelerated considerably because of the number of airplanes we have over there and the number per mission that you're doing. So, and there's some interesting differences in when you're flying the hour and a half really hard versus when you're flying 6 or 8 hours. It's actually sometimes worse because of the engine problems that you encounter over that type of throttle setting and that stuff. So
when you went to Iraq and Afghanistan, does this bird go over, or do you go over and just use the planes that are there?
Yeah, we actually take these, and part of the reason is you have to kind of spread that airframe time over the fleet of the F-16s in the United States, because if you just left a set of 10 there, they would fly until they're basically done flying for the airframe time. So they'd burn out in a year, and then those airplanes would basically have to be junked because of the airframe time on them. So that's one way they rotate units, and then we all bring in our own airplanes. We don't bring all of them, but we bring a portion of them.
Do you fly them or ship them?
We fly them. Yep.
You do fly them.
No good way to fly them, or no good way to ship them, really.
FedEx won't take it.
No. Or it's just a little cost prohibitive.
Yeah, okay.
So.
Anybody else got a question for Major? Okay, Major. Oops, we do have one. Hang on just a second.
You mentioned the new ones are all going to foreign nations. Are there any new ones going to the U.S. inventory?
Currently, right now, the U.S. has not bought airplanes in several years, so the production line is online for foreign sales only. So.
I think they're concentrating mainly on the F-35s.
Yep.
You know, we had the 22s going for a while, then Congress, in its infinite wisdom, said, no, we don't want that one. And if you've seen it out here the last couple of years, you're going, what are they doing? I can't let politics get in the way of my thing here. Shut up, Jerry. Anybody else got a question? Yeah. No, I'm not going to go there. Okay. Major, really a privilege to have you here. I think you've been here before, if I remember right.
Yeah, sure have.
And I'm glad to have you. Are you flying this at all this week?
You know, I'm not. One of our younger guys brought it up because he's never flown in here, and then we've got another guy from Wisconsin that's flying at home this time since I've had my turn. So yeah, but it's a privilege to be up here in a great air show. So thanks for having us, Jerry.
Major, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Round of applause for the Major. And, of course, Major, most of all, thank you for serving and to our guys over here. Appreciate it.